This week, the federal government announced a proposal to list captive chimpanzees as endangered, a move that would increase protections for them. This hour, two opposing views over whether this is a good idea. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In the first half hour, we'll hear from Kathleen Conley of the Humane Society. She's in favor of the reclassification, which would require permits for any future medical research involving chimps. Then in the second half hour, Dr. William Tallman, professor of neurology and neuroscience at the University of Iowa, will tell us why he thinks it's a bad idea and why chimps are still needed for medical research. That's all coming up after a look at this hour's news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This week, the federal government announced a proposal to list captive chimpanzees as endangered. Now, this would increase protections for the animals. Wild chimpanzees have been listed as endangered for some time, since 1990, but captive chimps are currently listed as threatened, and that's a designation that carries fewer protections. The proposed rule came about after officials determined that the Endangered Species Act doesn't allow for wild and captive animals to have separate legal statuses. Now, later in the hour, we'll hear from Dr. William Tallman. He's a professor of neurology and neuroscience at the University of Iowa, also past president of the Federation of American Societies for Experimental Biology. He believes this new classification would be negative for the public and for chimps. But first, let's talk with Kathleen Conley. She is vice president of animal research issues at the Humane Society of the United States. Good afternoon, Kathleen.
Good afternoon.
Why are you in support of this reclassification for captive chimpanzees as endangered?
Well, there are a number of reasons to afford chimpanzees with greater protections in the United States. We should be doing all that we can to protect these animals, both in captivity and the wild. So we very much welcome this move by the Fish and Wildlife Service to list all chimpanzees as endangered.
Mm-hmm. Tell us, what are the primary reasons for that? Is it because of the influence this would have on chimpanzees being used for research with this reclassification? Any future medical research involving chimps would require Fish and Wildlife's approval and a permit, right?
Correct. So there are a number of ways that captive chimpanzees in the United States are exploited through the use of their use in biomedical experiments, as well as in the entertainment industry and the pet trade. But nearly half of the captive chimpanzees in the United States are in laboratories today. We are the only remaining developed country using chimpanzees in research. And what this decision will do is require that people submit a permit in order to use a chimpanzee in harmful research. And this is something that we are very much looking forward to being finalized.
Mm-hmm. What difference do you think having a permit would have on the number of chimpanzees used for research? I understand there's about 1,000 in the United States currently being held in U.S. laboratories, many of them in the National Institutes of Health.
Correct. So about 900 chimpanzees are currently in laboratories. Like I said, that's nearly half the population in the United States. Importantly, a permit to use a chimpanzee would require that they demonstrate this will actually help the species. So using chimpanzees in hepatitis research, for example, likely wouldn't meet that bar, as in infecting a chimpanzee with hepatitis certainly doesn't help chimpanzee wild populations and their status in the wild.
Mm-hmm. So helping the species, meaning the chimpanzee species, no help for it doesn't count that it would help the human species.
Right. So this would, the Fish and Wildlife would make determinations or decisions based on whether it helps chimpanzees and not in terms of human health. But importantly, I think one thing to stress here is that on the other side of things, we have the National Institutes of Health, and they are have been historically a main funder of chimpanzee research and actually own about 360 of those chimpanzees in laboratories. And through public pressure and members of Congress weighing in, They solicited the Institute of Medicine to look closely at the use of chimpanzees in research and whether they, in fact, are necessary for human health research. And the Institute of Medicine came back and said, no, in fact, they are not necessary for biomedical research.
And okay.
This is because there are alternatives available. So this is another way of moving forward in protecting chimpanzees in laboratories from research that doesn't necessarily need to be happening.
Let me touch on the alternatives in a moment. But for those who don't know, it's not something we like to think about. But what are the conditions for chimpanzees in research labs? What happens to them?
We actually did an undercover investigation back in 2009. We released those results. We have video on our website at humanesociety.org if anyone is interested in seeing the conditions. But largely barren laboratory conditions, concrete and, you know, wire, stainless steel cages, chimpanzees housed in 5x5x7 cages for months at a time. We're talking about an extremely intelligent species who can live to be 60 years old. And so, importantly, if we don't need them scientifically, the public doesn't want them in laboratories, we need to be doing all that we can to end their use and get these animals to the sanctuary they deserve. And when we talk about sanctuaries, these are settings where chimpanzees can climb trees and roam in forested areas, live with companions, and live in peace.
Mm-hmm.
I recently visited our federal sanctuary known as Chimp Haven in Louisiana and saw the release of chimpanzees who have been in laboratories for more than 50 years. And it was incredible to see them walk out into that grass for the first time, look above their heads and see the sky without any bars and enjoy the sunshine on their faces. And these animals so deserve that after over 50 years in laboratories.
Mm-hmm. You talked about the housing, which you object to in the chimpanzees that are held in labs. I'm curious as to why you didn't mention the types of experiments.
Oh, that's a good question. So we did see chimpanzees who were chased with dart guns and screaming in fear at these procedures. They were knocked down and had liver punch biopsies, a number of invasive procedures done to them. But largely, chimpanzees are largely being warehoused in the United States. So I think it's important to point out that there are experiments that are happening that do involve invasive procedures, and we do oppose those. But chimpanzees largely aren't being used anymore. We are the only country in the world, like I said, continuing this practice, and so we don't need to be warehousing these animals. It is time to get them into sanctuary and out of the laboratory.
What alternatives are out there for testing, if not on chimpanzees?
Importantly, the Institute of Medicine did point to in vitro alternatives, computer modeling, for example, human mm-hmm. clinical studies, epidemiological studies, a whole array of tools available to us in terms of alternatives.
Remind us what in vitro means in this context.
Yeah, in the test tube is pretty much what that means. So you can do things without using animals. For example, the National Institutes of Health recently put a lot of money into a program for on a chip. So you literally create organs on a chip and study the impact of drugs and chemicals, for example, on human cells. So these are more human-relevant procedures. And this, to us, is the way forward. You know, chimpanzees, we would not say, haven't resulted in any gains. Certainly, you know, gains had been made in the past using chimpanzees. But looking forward, it is time to move away from this practice and invest, you know, our money, our taxpayer dollars, in more effective research that is actually relevant to humans.
Have you interacted with chimpanzees personally?
Yes, and actually I worked in a research laboratory that bred monkeys for research for a number of years, and my experience there led me to this job at the Humane Society of the United States advocating for ultimately moving away from using animals by the conditions I saw there and the fact that this isn't, you know, the type of research we can do better.
Mm-hmm.
As far as chimpanzees, I worked with them in a sanctuary setting, and, you know, like I said, they are extremely intelligent. they kept me on my toes for sure every day. They can be deceptive and trick you. And so looking into their eyes, I kept thinking of every day. I kept thinking about those who were in laboratories. And then that's what led me to my current job of trying to get them out of laboratories.
Is the Humane Society against all animal testing, all animals?
We are working towards ultimately replacing the use of animals in research when there are alternatives available. We put a lot of emphasis on developing those alternatives. So we don't just say, here, you shouldn't be using animals. We say, here is a scientific solution for replacing them. But until the day when we do replace animals, we have an obligation to reduce the number of animals used and refine the research so they experience less suffering. So, example, using, giving them painkillers is one example of our responsibility to their welfare.
Mm-hmm. Let me anticipate some of the arguments we'll hear in our second half hour. Someone who is arguing against this change. If you've just joined us, we're talking about a federal government proposal to list captive chimpanzees as endangered. They're listed as threatened currently, and listing them as endangered would increase protections for the animals. For instance, with the reclassification, any future medical research involving chimps would require the Fish and Wildlife's approval, that part of the government, and a permit. Let me make some of the arguments, if I can, quickly, Kathleen, and have you respond to them, that we anticipate in the second half hour against changing this classification. We will probably hear that chimpanzee testing actually helps the wild population of chimps, helps chimps by discovering antibiotics, vaccines for both humans and chimps.
Well, you know, the reality is that there are not any efforts out there that are geared to help chimpanzees. It would be impractical to try to treat or vaccinate chimpanzees in the wild, for example. There are a number of ways that you could, if you were studying a small population, you could study them in the wild non-invasively. So we don't need to keep chimpanzees in laboratories. You know, we could learn about their health and welfare non-invasively in sanctuary settings. There's a whole array of ways we could learn about bettering the health of chimpanzees, but don't need them in laboratories to do so.
Mm-hmm. What about in the case of a potential pandemic? If we have captive chimpanzees classified as endangered, the argument may be that we would not be able to have them for testing and we would be in a crisis of a pandemic.
Well, like I say, we are pressing for alternatives that are more human relevant. I mean, we are seeing the reason the Fish and Wildlife gave captive chimpanzees a separate status back in 1990 was this notion that they were critical to HIV research, and it ends up they actually failed as a model for HIV. So I think there's this mindset that we're going to only be able to turn to chimpanzees and they're the answer. Time and again, historically, that has not been the case. And again, we need to be moving towards more human relevant, and it's extremely expensive to take care of chimpanzees in the laboratory. Like I said, it's less costly to retire them. Over $60 per day per chimpanzee to simply warehouse these animals. We can certainly be using our taxpayer dollars to develop those alternatives so that when a pandemic, and hopefully will not happen, but if a pandemic happens, we have the right tools.
Mm-hmm. Why not go the legislative route here instead of reclassification, simply outlaw chimp testing through some kind of legislative action?
We actually had legislation in the last Congress that did get at this issue of phasing out invasive research on chimpanzees. You know, the current policy efforts to list them as endangered and our pending National Institutes of Health decision, which they had a working group back in January that said, you know, if you choose to use a chimpanzee in the future, here are the very strict criteria that should be applied. And actually, government, you should retire nearly 90% of the chimpanzees you own. We simply don't need to maintain this large population. Mm-hmm. So we are getting gains through these government decisions in the right direction.
I wonder if you can put yourself in the position that I think our second half hour guest will say he's in, having a friend who has benefited from research done on chimpanzees, life-threatening disease that was benefited by research with chimpanzees. I think he will make this case. Have you asked yourself, what if you, a family member, a close friend, had a disease, and the research that cured that disease depended on research with chimps? Wouldn't that change your opinion?
Well, you know, I think that importantly, I said that chimpanzees in the past may have contributed. I feel very confident, and the Institute of Medicine reinforced this, that we do not need chimpanzees for the current biomedical research that's happening today, and we have alternatives available, and that's where we should be placing our emphasis moving forward. So I feel very confident, you know, having come from, I went into this field firmly believing in the use of, you know, primates and other animals for biomedical research, and I have seen that that really is not the direction we should be going in, and changed my mind and decided to go at this from a different angle. And I, you know, I think the public is very supportive of the development of alternatives and will continue to weigh in on these important issues.
Kathleen Connolly, thank you very much. Vice President of Animal Research Issues at the Humane Society of the United States. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Coming up in just a moment, we'll hear an opposing view from Dr. William Tallman. He's a professor of neurology and neuroscience at the University of Iowa. That's when we return. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced a proposal on Tuesday to protect great apes under the Endangered Species Act, both in captivity and in the wild. Now, wild chimpanzees have been listed as endangered for some time, since back in 1990. But captive chimps, for them, it's a different story. They're currently listed as threatened, and that's a designation that carries fewer protections. Now, the proposed rule came about after officials determined that the Endangered Species Act doesn't allow for wild and captive animals to have separate legal statuses. Joining me to continue our conversation, Dr. William Tallman. He is a professor of neurology and neuroscience at the University of Iowa. Also, for our purposes, it's interesting to note he's past president of the Federation of American Societies for Experimental Biology and an active member of its Committee on Animals in Research. Dr. Tallman, welcome to our program.
Thanks very much, Ben. Appreciate being here.
Now, as you know, in our first half hour, we heard from Kathleen Connolly of the Humane Society. And what this proposal would mean... the proposal will be submitted for months of public comment before being finalized at the end of the year. The proposal would criminalize the trafficking of chimpanzees across state borders for purchase and sale, and it would force research laboratories to request permits for tests that could harm apes. Now, you take a different position than Kathleen Connolly of the Humane Society. Why is reclassification of captive chimps as endangered a bad thing, in your opinion?
Well, let me just comment. I didn't hear Ms. Connolly's comments, so I don't know that I take necessarily an adverse position to hers, but I suspect that's true. She's with the Humane Society of the United States, or ACSUS, which is a little easier to say. The concern that I've got, frankly, is not one of claiming or making the animals endangered. They've been, as you've already stated, endangered in the wild already. There was an exception to the research use of animals. And by the way, the advance notice of proposed rulemaking that's just been released from the Fish and Wildlife Service is not very clear as to which animals in captivity are going to have this rule applied. It's not at all clear how they're going to handle entertainment chimpanzees as opposed to those in research. Mm-hmm. But back to the issue that concerns scientists is that chimpanzees, while they are used very infrequently in this country, very infrequently, still have, and more importantly, I would emphasize, may have, even unseen at this time, very important relevance to biomedical research. We don't know all the diseases that there are or will be, and therefore it's very difficult to know whether this very important model in which diseases have been studied previously in being absent from the opportunity for study in the future will leave us without a very important model for some diseases that haven't even shown on the horizon.
As a professor of neurology and neuroscience, help us understand how animals are used as models for humans, in which cases, because as I understand it, different animals, non-human animals, make different suitable experimental animals for research. Give us a quick primer on that.
Well, that's a very good question and observation. The chimpanzee, and that's specifically what the Fish and Wildlife Service rule applies to, is a chimpanzee. The chimpanzee shares many genetic features with humans. They're referred to often as our closest cousins as a result of those genetic features that they share. As a result, they also share some diseases that humans have. Most specifically, the chimpanzee and the human are, I believe, the only species in which hepatitis C can occur. This, among the hepatitides, is one for which we don't have a cure. Chimpanzee research was vital in studies for vaccines of hepatitis A and hepatitis B that now, as a result of the chimpanzee work, has led to successful vaccines that are used routinely in humans. So it's very important in looking for what might be called a model in an animal, a model of human disease, to find one that reflects that human disease. And a relatively few, but some diseases in the chimpanzee reflect what happens in the humans.
Okay, so we can say that while, generally speaking, the chimpanzees are one of our closest primate relatives, are they in all cases the best test subjects, regardless of what you're looking at? No, it doesn't sound like
No, they aren't. No, there are other alternative test subjects or test models, if you will. Any scientist that does work with animals, and I'm speaking of animals, period, now, as opposed to chimpanzees, knows, both because of our own intent and because of federal regulations and because of oversight from a number of different agencies that look at everything we do, knows that any effort to use an animal in research, any animal, whether it be a mouse, a rat, a bird, whatever, any animal has to be justified in what it is going to bring to the table in terms of the scientific questions being asked. Mm-hmm. We have to go through that before we can even start to do a study. And after we've done that, we obviously have to get approval for the study. So there's nothing unique about the chimpanzee with regard to the extraordinary efforts that every scientist makes before even starting a study using an animal. What's unique is that the chimpanzee itself is so close to humans in its genetic and in its sociological and in other elements of the species itself that we need to be particularly careful with something that's as close to us that we make appropriate ethical and moral choices.
What's also unique, unlike many animals that find themselves in research labs, is that this is an endangered species in the wild, the only species classified with this split classification. And it's a classification that we as humans come up with. In the wild, it is endangered. In laboratories, it is threatened and therefore not regarded with as much protection. Why does this make sense for this one species to make the difference there between whether this animal is in captivity or in the wild? It is one species.
It's possible that you'll be surprised at my answer, and I suspect Ms. Connolly would be too. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. If an animal is an endangered animal, an animal is an endangered animal. I might ask, however, that where is the rub here? The rub and what has grown out of all of the guffawful over the past 2 years, 3 years really, since the HSUS has been seeking to have this rule passed, the rub is that they don't want research being done in animals, period. And chimps are a very specific animal that's easy for us to relate to. We don't have to anthropomorphize chimps. They do that for us, okay? Mm-hmm. As a result, a chimp is something that we all want to protect as much as possible. But the rub for me with regard to the rule is if the animal is endangered, as our American bald eagle was endangered, we made efforts to have breeding programs to have the American bald eagle come back. We made that with the gray wolf to make the gray wolf come back. Why doesn't HSUS have an active breeding program to take this endangered animal, which all of us would like to protect, all of us would like to see thrive, to make sure that the animals actually are no longer endangered?
Dr. William Talman is my guest this half hour, if you've just joined us. We're talking about the fact that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced a proposal on Tuesday to protect the great apes under the Endangered Species Act, both in captivity and in the wild. Well, there are about 1,000 chimpanzees in captivity in the United States, I think 900 or 1,000 in research labs in the United States. They have a different level. They are listed as threatened compared with chimpanzees in the wild, which are endangered, and the threatened designation carries fewer protections. Now, if all chimpanzees were viewed alike as endangered in the wild or in captivity, Dr. Tallman, you would need, as a researcher, to apply for a permit. A permit would be mandatory. Why not have that extra hurdle, especially for an animal that is so close to us and so endangered?
I believe that the nature of the permit, the process by which the permit would be itself handled, these things are going to be worked out, if you will, or at least somewhat clarified during this period of public discussion of the rule. I'm not really able to speak to it. However, the concern that I would have, and I think any biomedical scientist would have, is that we are talking in part about a political process here. The issue itself is a political issue. And when we talk about politics, we have people that will have differences of opinion. That drags out the period of time from the time when it's recognized that there's a need to use the chimp or other animal for the research that may be critical. That research itself may be critical for some new disease. How long would we have to wait to be able to determine if what has been deemed vital research to be put off until the permit is received?
Yes, but
these
but
are all things that can be discussed.
Public debate in a democratic society is necessary, does take long, is not always pretty, but we do want that.
I agree that public debate and discourse is critical, particularly in a democratic society, but I would argue that the best debate, the debate that will lead to the most appropriate outcome, is to have experts in a field in that science determine whether there's an appropriateness of need and whether the value derived from the study justifies the use of any animal that would be involved in that study. I mean no disrespect, but that's not something that the person on the street may have the scientific qualifications to address.
So is it purely a question of science? I, as a person without a scientific degree, have no say in what my society does with chimps, with dogs, with rabbits, with anything? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, no.
It's left entirely to the experts?
Oh, no, no, no. I'm not saying that at all. In fact, we as a democratic society have the potential for saying that research will not be done in this species, period. What I'm saying, though, is to weigh the value of the question that's being asked and to weigh by permit whether the individual species can be used in an individual experiment really requires a level of expertise to look at that. I can tell you absolutely that there will be permits very appropriately not allowed, okay, so that the species would not be allowed by permit to be studied. That's what we want. But we want people who have, I would want, people who would have a level of expertise where the decision that's made can be one in which the American public can take confidence that that has been made by people who've given a broad and expert view of it.
Perhaps you can tell us a little bit. One of the criticisms that Kathleen Connolly of the Humane Society made in our first half hour is the conditions in which animals are kept for research purposes in this country, the chimpanzees specifically, that it's a sterile environment, cages. Tell us a little bit about how the animals are kept and the rules involved there.
Yeah. As I mentioned to you before, I'm going to say when I'm not an expert in a particular area, I've never personally done work research with chimpanzees. I've visited primate centers where chimpanzee research has been going on. I have not ever seen in those facilities what I've heard claimed to be the abhorrent conditions that are claimed by some of the anti-vivisection groups that do not want work done on animals at all, but also and specifically now in chimpanzees. Some of the caging that occurs with any of the primates is for the primate's protection as well as for the control of the experiment itself. I would ask, though, if these animals are so terribly treated, why is it that the average lifespan of an animal, a chimpanzee in the wild, is between 40 and 50 years, and in captivity, including research captivity, over 60 years? These animals are not being abused and mistreated. They're being treated appropriately for the conditions that the experiment allows, okay? Appropriately for that condition. We may all, again, anthropomorphize and look and say, it's in a cage. I wouldn't want to be in a cage. But if that cage is for the animal's protection, if that cage is for assurance of validity of the study, there can be reasons for the caging far beyond the reasons being that the scientist is inhumane.
The young are taken away from the mothers. There's another aspect that is deemed to be inhumane by many people.
Yeah. I'm not really qualified to speak to that. I don't know about the young being taken away from the mothers. And the reason I say I don't know is there hasn't been any breeding of chimpanzees for research in this country for at least the past 10 and perhaps even longer years. As a result, I'm not sure where these young and mothers are coming from. I'm just not qualified to speak to that.
One of the arguments is that it's expensive for the government to fund this ape research, costing the NIH, which has, I think, roughly half of the chimpanzees kept in labs in this country, about $12 million a year. Isn't that an argument enough? If we had alternatives to chimpanzees, wouldn't that be a powerful argument?
I believe the NIH, as well as some of the primate centers, have decided, in fact, that there are alternatives for many things that have been previously only could be studied in chimpanzees. And both because of cost, but I would say even more particularly because of the scientific need, there's been a reduction, a recognized reduction in the need of these animals, very special animal. And as a result, some of those centers, including the NIH itself, have reduced their aim toward the use of chimpanzees and the maintenance of them. But it's not free by any stretch of the imagination for these animals to go into a sanctuary. HSUS has in its own literature that it costs them, I'm not sure about them, but that's what they say, it costs them $1 million a year, $1 million over the course of the animal's life for them to house an animal in a sanctuary. Just to point out that sanctuaries which are being promoted by HSUS and other rights groups, sanctuaries themselves are not cheap.
Dr. William Talaman is my guest, professor of neurology and neuroscience at the University of Iowa, talking about the proposal by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to protect great apes under the Endangered Species Act, both in captivity and in the wild. There's been this split situation with chimpanzees. Captive chimps currently list as threatened, that's the designation, carrying fewer protections than wild chimpanzees, which are listed as endangered, and the proposal here is to make all chimps under this endangered category classification. So you would agree to some degree with Kathleen Connolly in our first half hour that we are moving past this, a less of a dependence on chimpanzees as test subjects. She cited in vitro testing, for instance, computer modeling, human studies. So these are viable alternatives. You would agree with her in that, but you're saying we are not that far to move beyond yet.
I'm saying that there are some things that we can't even anticipate, diseases, in fact, that we can't even anticipate having to be dealt with, in which the chimpanzee may be a valuable, in fact, a critical model. In fact, what I'm saying mirrors what people who are far more expert than I in the Institute of Medicine said in response to an effort by our own senator, Senator Harkin, to have the Institute of Medicine weigh in on the need for chimpanzees. Now, that need, as defined by the Institute of Medicine, is being misrepresented by folks who want no studies in chimpanzees. I've heard the HSUS line that the Institute of Medicine said there was no longer a need for chimpanzees. That is not what they said. What the Institute of Medicine said was that there was a very marked reduction in that need.
Here's the exact quote, if I can jump in here. Institute of Medicine, quote, "Recent advances in alternative research tools have rendered chimpanzees largely unnecessary as research subjects. This report does not endorse an outright ban on chimpanzee research. Rather, it establishes a set of uniform criteria for determining when, if ever, current and future research use of chimpanzees is necessary to treat, prevent or control public health challenges, end of quote, from the Institute of Medicine.
That is a precise and accurate quote, but it goes on because the Institute of Medicine actually defined three areas in which chimpanzee research they thought could even now be valid and valuable, as well as emerging diseases that they recognized that we couldn't even know about now that could in the future require the use of chimpanzees. And that's why they did not support an absolute ban.
Mm-hmm. What about the fact that many other countries, certainly countries that do a lot of medical research, included on that list industrialized countries, the Netherlands, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, Sweden, Germany, Austria, certainly countries where a lot of important medical research is done, they have a great ape research ban currently in place, and they operate, and they make advances in medicine.
And they also rely upon us to make some advances that they don't make.
You're saying that if they get to a sticking point and they can't use computer modeling or in vitro testing, they will export it to a lab here?
If there's something that can only be done in chimps of the what you referred to as the industrialized countries, if it could only be done in chimps, the United States was where it was going to be done. That is true.
Mm-hmm. Some of our listeners, Dr. Tallman, may be interested in, to the extent to which this is taking place, experimentation, chimpanzees, other animals in labs in Iowa. Where does this take place here? Do you know?
I don't believe there's any chimpanzee work going on in Iowa, certainly not at the University of Iowa. I'm not aware of any research going on in Iowa using chimpanzees.
Mm-hmm. But certainly other animals. What are some common animals that one would find in lab settings?
The most common animal, not only at the University of Iowa and other Iowa biomedical laboratories, is going to be the mouse. But that's also true across this country. Mm-hmm. Mouse, and what's referred to as wild type, that's just, if you will, quote, normal, end quote, mice, but also mice that have had genetic modifications, allowing studies of certain diseases, which, by the way, could previously have needed chimpanzee but no longer do because of the emergence of that model, the mouse model. The mouse is far and away the most frequently used animal.
Do you foresee a time, perhaps not in our lifetimes, when experiments on animals just aren't needed anymore?
I don't see that at all, no. You know, we physicians, and I'm a physician as well as a scientist, are accused of sometimes thinking of ourselves as God. I want to disabuse everybody of that idea. Also of the implication that we're God and that we know everything. We have no clue of some of the things that we haven't even scratched the surface on understanding. And the only way that we can really understand how systems work and work together is in an intact animal that is being studied in ways that allow us to study things and how they work together. You can't do that in cell culture. Mm-hmm. You can't do that in studying membranes of cells. You can't do that in modifying how an individual cell itself works. Things that we can do technologically now and we can do with great aplomb. But if we don't have the animal to be able to study in the future, there will be unanswered questions that will be directly relevant to disease and to health.
Dr. William Tallman, thank you for joining us. Bill Tallman is professor of neurology and neuroscience at the University of Iowa. We appreciate you coming in today.
Thank you, Ben. It's been a pleasure. Thanks very much.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. Podcasting and on-demand audio available at iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music is written and performed by the River Monks. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.